distilled 26th of May 1975, and this is a continuation of the other side of the tape. I also have some ideas that I've been thinking about for quite a long time. Probably have notes in my notebook about this. Of utilizing a differential and two engines in an automobile to give an infinite variation of speed and to allow both engines to run near their optimum conditions for proper fuel consumption and the best optimum all-around conditions of torque, fuel consumption, etc. Now, I bought two small gasoline engines, four-cycle, some time ago to do these experiments. I also bought an Opel rear-end differential and whatnot, hoping to use it. It's not the ideal, but I thought with that, I could do the experiments that I wanted to do to test the feasibility of this. This would be an important thing with today's petroleum shortages. I'm also interested in doing some work with solar energy and perhaps some other energy problems where I can combine my chemical ability with the mechanical ability, as I have been able to do so effectively in the past in the field of high pressure. Our Mega Diamond Corporation, which has now been broken into other corporations, one of which is Dion, D-I-O-N, and one of which is DBT, standing for Dwayne, Bill, and Tracy Company, we're still having our personnel problems. Dwayne Horton and Bill Pope do not get along at all. It seems to get worse as time goes on. And I don't really know how these problems are going to be resolved. I'm caught in the middle of this fight lots of times, and trying to keep peace on both sides is really a difficult problem. Like most people, both these men have their good and bad points. Dwayne tends to be an obstructionist and actually is quite irrational at times in his obstructive acts. On the other hand, Bill tends to pass judgment too quickly and gets us into trouble by doing things without truly consulting Dwayne or I. We got stuck on an electronic cooling thing that caught Bill's eye, and they'd sort of agreed to go in 50-50 with the New York people, Diamond Distributors Incorporated, who are 50% owners in our joint marketing venture, which is called Mega Diamond Industries, and which is located at 539 Fifth Avenue, New York. Now, if Bill had listened to Dwayne and I on that, we wouldn't be in the trouble we are. I think we owe about $75,000. The thing turned out to be a phony thing, and we were just taken at the present time. DDI in New York is sort of holding the bag on that, but they could force us to pay if they wanted to. Also, Bill tends, these are good things, but he needs to be reined in. I'm too conservative, and Dwayne is too conservative, but Bill reaches out, doesn't have any fear of going way into debt, and just doesn't hold back quite enough on some things. Also, he likes to travel a lot. He's off to Russia now, and I don't really believe it's for the good of the country, but it's going to cost us a pile. He recently went to Japan. I'm not sure how valuable that trip was. I'm quite skeptical of it. Also, he just recently, without consulting Dwayne and I, purchased a Mercedes-Benz for the company, which he intends to use himself exclusively, and which he's having delivered in Europe so that he and Margaret can tour Europe and what they can see by. In fact, he's going to take it clear through the communist countries, clear to Moscow. And of course, all this is at company expense. It's a thing I would never do, but he feels it's perfectly all right. And when we learn of this and talk to him about it, he says, well, that's just his salary. None of us have been taking any salary, and he wants to skirt these grayish areas, which are probably allowed by Internal Revenue Service, but it worries me to have these kind of things done. On the bookkeeping end, Dwayne has been responsible for stock certificates and is the official treasurer, and it just has not been anywhere near the perfectionist in this kind of thing that I think you need to be. So we humans have our problems, and I don't know what the solutions are. Personally, what I'd like to do is resign from the positions I hold. I really I attend a weekly meeting of the three of us once or twice a month. Sometimes I'll go to every one of them, then I won't go for a while, but it's difficult because I always feel caught in the middle between the feud that's always going on between Dwayne and Bill. Dwayne and Bill, at the time we formed the company, were interested in doing the management part. I told them I did not like management, and they says, well, they do that part, but yet they wanted me to retain a title because they felt that that my name would help the company. I was the president for a while, but I got out of that. Now I think I'm not quite sure what I am, but I think I'm chairman of the board of Mega Diamond, and in DBT I guess I'm a vice president, but these are really just honorary titles, and it might be wise for me to just get out from those. Our married children all of a sudden are all buying houses. David and Karen is his second wife, of course, whom he married about a year and a half after Donna Ray died. David and Karen have a couple of boys and live in Princeton, New Jersey, where he works for the research laboratory of Ingersoll Rand Corporation. And just Saturday last, they moved into a new home that they bought in Princeton, New Jersey. These homes, none of the homes that the kids are buying are new, and their cost just seems amazing. I think David is spending something like $60,000. Shirleen and Daniel Bartholomew, who have a son and a daughter, were living in Illinois, about 30 miles west of Chicago. In Winfield, have transferred to the parent company of Bell Telephone. He's working for Bell Telephone Lab in Chicago. Are now in White Plains, New York, working for American Telephone and Telegraph. And they have just purchased a home in White Plains, also an older, fairly large home. And they are paying something in the neighborhood of $60,000 for that home. Out on the West Coast, Elizabeth and J. Martin Neal, her husband, who works for Hewlett-Packard in a Cupertino plant or office of Hewlett-Packard, They have just bought a home on Poppy Way in San Jose, where they have paid something around $50,000 for this home, probably 15, 20 year old. And then in Palo Alto, where our son H. Tracy Jr. and his wife Elizabeth Huntington are in the process of buying a home. I don't believe they move in until sometime in June. In Palo Alto, and they're paying something in the neighborhood of $60,000 for this older home. Tracy Jr. works in the research laboratory of Hewlett-Packard, their main lab and office there in Palo Alto. At the present time, our daughter Charlotte is located in Buenos Aires North Mission of our Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And she has been there, I guess, since about, I believe, February. She was at the language training mission for 3 months or so, and then went to her present mission, Buenos Aires North Mission in Argentina. At the present time, in the church here at home, I am teaching the young adults. For almost 2 years, this is a recent job that I've had just for a month or two. For the past couple of years, I have been the priest's explorer advisor in our ward. Nowadays in the church, this is a dual job. We used to have two men, one man for the Mutual Improvement Association part and a separate man to teach their lesson in their priesthood quorum meeting each Sunday. But now one man has the whole job, and I've had this job. The job was hard at first, but and I've had I have been explorer advisor for a number of times during the past 20 years in this Pleasant View ward, or have been associated with the MIA and the bishopric or some other way. But I finally started to enjoy this more, with having the Sunday opportunity of teaching a good religious lesson. And I've been working hard at this and have come to really enjoy it. The challenge with the young adults is a different kind of a challenge, but I'm also enjoying that opportunity. I've had little opportunity in the church in the past to be a teacher of Sunday school. For a very brief time during my college years, when I was coming home weekends to Ogden and going to college the rest of the week in Salt Lake City, University of Utah, with a lady whose last name was Nelson, I shared a teaching responsibility in a Sunday school class, but I don't believe that lasted very long. So this Sunday teaching experience with the priest was the first one I've had in my entire life. And I have enjoyed this change of being able to teach the gospel very much. It's been good for me, and I seem to have established a very good rapport with the students. Ida Rose is also teaching a Sunday school class. She's teaching a very difficult age. Well, I have to take that back. I taught a difficult age kid somewhere around 15 or 16 for just a few months here in the Pleasant View ward before they gave me the priest job. But after leaving the primary presidency, which Ida Rose did such a good job in which she held for 5 years or so, she has had Sunday school teaching jobs. But these young people around 14 or 15 are very difficult to teach. That was my experience the few months I had some, and it's kind of disheartening. Ida Rose spends an awful lot of time on her lessons. We talk about her lessons together, particularly after we give the lessons on Sunday. We go over them, but sometimes you have a good experience with the kids, and sometimes you don't. This past Sunday, Ida Rose is quite discouraged because she spent such a long long time on the lesson, and then it didn't go over too well. At least she felt it hadn't gone over too well. I tell her that they learn a lot more than you think they're learning. We had a daddy-daughter affair at the church last Sunday night. Donna Ray Wolf is the teacher of the 17-year-old girls, and Nancy is in this class. Donna Ray is a good teacher, and she'd arranged this get-together and had various interesting activities, like all the fathers drawing a picture of the daughters. Yeah, all of them drew pictures that could be recognizable, and also there were things about how the daughters perceived themselves and how we perceive the daughters at age 5 and age 17, and it was all an enjoyable experience. Dr. Wally McGann, the director of research at Ingersoll Rand in Princeton, New Jersey, came out here last Friday night. He was really quite impressed with the BYU. Didn't realize there was such an installation in the world. Also very impressed with all of the high-pressure work. He was amazed at the number of tetrahedral and cubic presses that we have at the university. He also was quite enthusiastic about the possibilities of using megadiamond in various rock drilling bits. Particularly is he keen on an idea of using the megadiamond as a hard central portion of some kind of a cutting bit. He calls it the beaver tooth idea. Apparently beaver tooth is self-sharpening because it has a hard core and then a softer material around it, and the softer material of course wears away faster, and the hard sharp core keeps in the protruding position. This sounds like a good idea. He wants to see if we can't make some kind of arrangement between Ingersoll Rand and megadiamond to do development work on megadiamond just for use in drilling operations, particularly in rock drilling. Dr. McGann took Ida Rose and I and his niece. The niece's husband was busy with a night class, so he didn't go. But McGann took us to dinner at this new place in Orem on State Street called the Plank House. Last week, or the week before, I installed a new sprinkling system on the north part of our house, east of the house, where Ida Rose had this dug up, had the lawn dug up there for a place to plant some cantaloupe, and she's now put cantaloupe in that area. But I installed and connected a new sprinkling system. That sprinkling system's been moved around about 3 times since we first built the house, and I put some pop-up sprinklers in there, which should get up high enough to be effective in watering vegetables that are planted in that area. Tuesday, 27th of May, 1975. I went to Provo Floral today, picked out a funeral spray to be telegraphed to Aunt Grace's funeral in California. It cost about $28, including the telephone charge and the taxes. I signed it Love, Tracy, Eugene, Wendell, Donald, and Albert Hall. I went to Lerner Pepper Company, which is located on Second West, just south of the railroad tracks, and looked around for used steel that might be used in our company. They had a tremendous quantity of used boiler tube that they are selling for about 11 cents a pound. They acquired this and other used steel on hand from an old smelter that they are dismantling that is located east of Tooele. A new smelter will be built there for refining the new copper ore that has been located on that side of the Ochre Range by Anaconda Copper. They also will probably do some custom smelting there. There were some heavy steel rounds that were of interest, but I thought it would not be wise to buy at this time. I called a steel firm in Buffalo that had advertised in Metalworking News some 5.5-inch diameter by 20-foot long 4140 hot-rolled rounds at 8 cents a pound. Unfortunately, the 20,000 pounds of this material had already been sold. At 8 cents a pound, the material is really a bargain because the West Coast price of such material is almost 50 cents a pound. I asked the company why it was so cheap. They said they were a dealer in low-carbon steel and had had this alloy steel on hand for quite some time and had just decided to price it low and get rid of it. I have been searching for a good price on some steel somewhere in the range of 13 to 16 inch diameter, 4140 or 4340, with which to make bases for a new 300 ton press that I'm constructing. This will be different from the one that I started to build in 1971 and which was recently sold to the National Physical Laboratory of India as a derated press of 200 tons. I really couldn't find a bargain. I've been searching for a week or more and finally ended up ordering 14.5-inch diameter pressed round 4142 steel from Jorgensen Steel in Los Angeles. The piece will be 48 inches long, and we will cut this into sections approximately 5 to 6 inches in thickness to make the bases. Wes Liffert, my machinist, was moving the horizontal milling machine, which I recently was high bidder on and purchased from the BYU Chemistry Department for about $1,280 today. And he tipped it over. This is very dangerous. It just missed him by about 8 inches from doing serious damage to himself. It broke a casting on the machine and bent things up in places and spilled an awful lot of oil all over the floor. I had gone up to the school for a while, and then when I came back, I found him trying to mop up this oil. So I helped him mop up and clean that up, and we got the machine approximately into the position we wanted it. I hope it is not seriously damaged. Put a new 3-tooth per inch high speed tooth welded edge bandsaw blade in our Marvel Model 8 saw. Cut off another piece off and cut off another section 7.25 inch wide from some 13 inch diameter sorrel bar ductile iron that is being used for the ram heads on this 300 ton press I just mentioned. I had cut 5 other pieces with a dull blade and had had quite a bit of difficulty doing it. It took about 2.5 hours with a dull blade. With a new blade, it took 40 minutes to make the cut through the 13 inch diameter material. Then with the truck, I dragged the balance of the piece of steel, which weighs about 1,000 pounds, out into the yard and took an hour and a half or so to worry the material over into the area of the steel pile, which is in front of the bathroom on the building. This evening, Ida Rose and I went to Kmart and we bought a couple of fluorescent fixtures to install in the shop for better lighting over the small lathe and in the east end of the south room. Wes did some more work on packaging and skidding and crating the press for shipment to University of Western Ontario. This is a press that we brought back from Canada clear last June to be repaired. We listened to President Ford's energy speech this evening. He is correct in stating what needs to be done, and the Congress certainly does need chastising for being nothing but obstructionist and trying to retain and maintain popularity with the people they think that will vote for them. I worked some on my Sunday school lesson for next time, which is on celestial marriage. May 30th, 1975. The following are events of yesterday, May 29th. I have Wesley Lifford working on cylinder heads for a new 300-ton cubic press number 2. I'm using 13-inch diameter ductile iron obtained from Quebec that is called Sorrel Bar. They no longer make this. The material was continuously cast from a very good grade of iron ore, and the pilot plant was in Quebec. They built a huge multi-million dollar factory in Ohio to manufacture this, and the plant caught on fire and the losses were so great that they have gone out of business. A pipe, a copper pipe in our house carrying hot water started to leak yesterday and was dripping through the ceiling of the downstairs near the northeast corner of our playroom. We have had a problem in that corner before from a pipe that had corroded through with a pinhole leak, so I suspected the same thing may have happened again. I had previously cut a hole through the upstairs floor in the southeast corner of our kitchen, right under where the refrigerator sits. We had since covered this hole over and have laid new floor covering there. However, I took up a piece of the floor covering and got through the old opening, and sure enough, it was the same thing again. A pinhole leak facing towards the south, and an elbow, a copper elbow, and a long, fine stream of water was squirting out through that. It's very difficult to work in that area, but finally I managed to unsolder the joints, get a new elbow, and replace it, this taking the entire afternoon. Last night, Ida Rose and I went to the open-air theater area at the Utah Hospital for people with mental problems. This is a rather beautiful stone area that was built by the WPA back around 1936. There are some young people. I believe they call themselves the Repertory Theater Company. Put on a play called Liberty Jail. It was very good, and while there were some liberties in the production over the historical facts, the whole idea of the anguish and the problems of the Prophet Joseph Smith and his associates when they spent 6 months in this vile jail was depicted. John Huntington, a brother of Elizabeth Huntington, who is married to our son Tracy Jr., played the part of Hiram Smith and did a very good job. Ida Rose worked around the yard gardening yesterday and cleaned out her greenhouse. She has a Lord and Burnham greenhouse about 9 by 12 foot in size on the back southwest corner of our lot, where she primarily grows orchids for fun and pleasure. I bought 6 copies of The House of the Lord, paperback edition by James E. Talmage, at a cost of approximately $12, and had them gift wrapped at the BYU to give to some members of my Sunday school class next Sunday. I also bought a hardback edition for myself, and as much as I can't seem to find the copy that I bought a couple of years ago. The ductile iron I bought from Canada came in a long bar about 72 inches long, very heavy in this size, and we have sawn it into pieces on our Marvel Model 8 bandsaw. It's quite a wonderful saw, even though it's about 30 years old, sawing steadily using a 3-tooth per inch hooked tooth high-speed steel blade to cut through that. A new blade cuts through that diameter in about 40 minutes. These new blades we just obtained for H. Tracy Hall Incorporated. I was forced to use an old dull blade to make most of the cuts last week, and I guess the week before. It took 2 hours and a half with a dull blade, and the cut was not too straight and left quite a pattern. The turnings from ductile iron are good to put on roses and trees with chlorosis, inasmuch as apparently the ferrous condition is obtained as it reacts with the soil, and ferrous iron of course is needed in this area. Ferrous iron is unavailable to the plants because of our alkaline soils. We have a great many pounds of these ductile iron turnings that we will have before we're through making these cylinder heads. The material cannot be sold, so I'll probably distribute it out on our farm and around the yard to put some iron in the soil. The price of steel is really getting out of hand these days. I obtained a quotation on 7 pieces of 16-inch round by 6.5-inch diameter AISI 4340 commercial forged steel. These will weigh 450 pounds each and cost $470 each, over a dollar a pound for steel, and this is not even aircraft quality. I was interested in these 4 bases for this new 300-ton cubic press I've been talking about. However, I have already looked around at other steel that I might use and did purchase, or at least I've ordered from Earl M. Jorgensen, a pressed piece of steel that is 14.5-inch diameter by about 4 feet long. This has not arrived yet. Will not be as good as forgings, but we will saw it with our bandsaw and use it for the bases. Even this material, which is just 4140 steel, commercial quality, I believe it's 4142 steel, will cost somewhere around 50 cents per pound. May 30th, 1975. I spent the morning at 1190 Columbia Lane at our shop cutting off various sizes of steel to proper length for machining on the new 300-ton inverted ram guide pin retraction cubic press that I am building. I also turned the Marvel Model 8 bandsaw 90 degrees back to its original position in order to cut off some 13-inch diameter steel. Wes and I had turned the saw so that the direction of travel of the moving blade was perpendicular to the door that is nearest to the canal. The shop, which was the old state road shed, had 4 sliding doors in the front. I removed all these doors because they were so badly damaged and leaked so much air, and replaced 3 of them with 10 foot tall by 6.5 foot wide swinging doors that are made of lumber and thoroughly insulated with glass wool bats. The third door from the canal was replaced with a little add-on where I built a restroom. I also gathered up a couple of 100 pounds of ductile iron turnings that came from Wes's turning of the cylinder heads for this press, and took them to the farm where I spread them around on the raspberry bushes. The ductile iron will react with water and other things in the soil and produce ferrous iron ion, which is good for chlorosis. Otto Rose and I went to the farm at about 4:30 and stayed until 9:30 p.m. where we worked on our garden out there. The controls on our 200-foot deep well, which we drilled a few years back, it's a 6-inch well, were frozen last winter, and one of the castings on the bottom of the control froze and split open, and I have taken that off and we'll hope to get that repaired tomorrow. On coming home, we stopped, as we usually do, at the drive-in at the top of the 8th South Hill, directly up from the farm, and got hamburgers and shakes. That drive-in is so popular, it's amazing. There are always, in the evening, cars lined up there waiting for takeout food. Last night was Payson High's graduation, and there must have been 25 cars there. It took us 20 minutes to get our hamburgers. The large P on the hill above the Payson High School seemed to have been painted with fluorescent paint last night, fluorescent white paint. And they were shining a large searchlight on it to make it light up. A little different scheme than used by the BYU, where they place oily rags all the way around the Y and then light them up. The BYU's Y, done that way, is much more effective than the easy way of that Payson High was apparently using. Saturday, 31st of May, 1975. I spent the entire morning trying to fix the cast iron manifold on the farm's pump control that was broken by freezing last winter. I finally fixed the thing by putting some Loctite, which is an anaerobic permafill, sealant into the crack. And after that had hardened, I put an epoxy aluminum-filled cement on top of that. The epoxy was supposed to set up quickly, but it took several hours for it to get so it wasn't tacky. While I was waiting for this to set up, I took some 4 3/4 inch diameter 4340 steel hot rolled round, drug it over by the shed, and then lifted up with a hoist, and sawed off about a 6-foot section for use in making binding rings. I then painted the rest so it wouldn't rust, and drug it with the truck out into the yard and rolled it over where I could stack it up. We have quite a pile of steel in front of our shed, as we usually call it, or our shop at 1190 Columbia Lane, most of it rusting away. I don't have any forklift or other handling equipment for easily handling this, and we need to get most of it painted so it will not rust. Ida Rose was at the farm the entire day planting things. I got out there in the afternoon, and we worked until about 9:30 at night. I'll let Ida Rose say what she planted out on the farm.
Just talk?
Yeah.
It's been a bad year. There's been so much moisture that our ground is real hard this year, so we've had a lot of clods. But I planted two rows of different snap beans, climbing beans, dill, carrots, a row of... They say that marigolds are supposed to help keep the bugs away from your vegetables, so I planted that. This year I'm going to try it. Planted a row of marigolds next to the climbing beans. I planted tomatoes. And
they were transplants from...
Yeah, that grew in the greenhouse. And
peas?
Yeah, three rows of peas. And three rows of cantaloupe, and I really put the seed on, you know. We've had that seed for so long, I don't know how much of it will grow, but I decided not to keep it any longer, so I planted all of it. And potatoes, and a couple of rows of gladiolus, that's in case Virginia gets married this fall.
I didn't know about the gladiolus. Plant those some seed?
No, I got them. I was going to plant them on the farm so I'd have them, you know, a lot of glads this fall. Mm. I planted those in bulbs. Those come in bulbs.
I put the pump controls back together and it worked, and we tried out the sprinkling systems. We have two rows, each one operates independently, and we have an automatic control that will turn them on and off. I also ran the tractor around over some of the places where the weeds are bad, and got out some more weeds. Then we run up to Then we came home, arriving home about, what time did we get home? 6:30 or 7. We were both real tired, so I went to bed at 8 o'clock.
Zonked out.
And Ida Rose
didn't go to bed till
11 or 11:30. She's working on her Sunday school lesson, so I set the alarm for 5:15 to 4:45, a quarter to five. So I could get up to do my lesson. Sunday, June 1st, 1975. Beautiful day today. Spring has finally come to the valley. About 25 new students were placed in my young adult Sunday school class today. There were about 54 students there. The lesson went okay, although there were two babies in the class today, which made it a bit noisy. Ida Rose's lesson, which was on prayer, went well today also. My lesson was on celestial marriage. Fast meeting today was enjoyable. Monday, May 2nd, 1975. Virginia called today from Glasgow, Scotland. She had traveled there from Bucksburn, Aberdeen, Scotland to catch British Overseas Airway Corporation plane number 539, leaving 2nd of June at 12:55 p.m., intending to arrive in New York at 3:10 p.m. She had reserved her flight, but arrived only 20 minutes before flight time and they wouldn't let her go. So her flight was postponed one day, same flight. I think on overseas flights they require you to be there 1 hour before departure. So we called Shirlene and told her she's going to stay at Shirlene's house for 4 days. Shirlene will be coming out here on the 19th of June, flying on United Airlines number 7. 67, which will arrive at Salt Lake City at 9:35 p.m. Dan will come about 1 week later for our family reunion, which is being held near the end of June at the BYU Aspen Grove Family Camp. I worked at the shop most of the day yesterday, cutting off steel for our cubic Roman number 2, which will be a 300-ton capacity inverted anvil guide retraction type, in which I have a few new innovations. I also am rearranging the steel out in the yard and painting it so it will not rust. For family night last night, Mom and I and Nancy went to the movie Hell in the Pacific at the BYU. Nancy's in that very rebellious state where she doesn't like lessons and preaching, and so to keep some semblance of family unity, we usually go to a movie on Monday evening for family night. On Wednesday, June 4th, 1975, In the morning I took a load of trash to the Provo City dump, which is located just south of the Timpanogos Golf Course and is a swampy area that they have filled up through the years with garbage and whatnot. On the way back, I remembered that there was a hearing in the Utah County Commission's chambers concerning a sanitary landfill which would use abandoned clay pits west of Utah Lake. A number of years ago, I think about 1960, I had obtained some pyrophyllite-like material from these deep, very deep clay pits which had been abandoned after very large quantities of the pyrophyllite-like clay had been taken out by brick manufacturing companies, I think primarily in Salt Lake City. The available material is rather badly weathered that has been on the surface and readily spalls and flakes off. The material is